Good evening. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry. Former FBI Director James Comey was set to testify before the Senate Intelligence Committee on Russian efforts to interfere in the 2016 U.S. elections. But in reality, his testimony today was about interactions he had with Donald Trump before he was fired. The following written statement by Comey was released on Wednesday by the Senate Intelligence Committee. It forms the basis of questions today. There was speculation that Comey would be reading his written statement, but he didn't, so bear with me. It's 7 pages in a narrative structure detailing 3 meetings with Donald Trump and a number of telephone conversations. And we have it on our website at WBAI.org under News. It begins with the January 6th briefing. Comey writes, "I first met then-President-elect Trump on Friday, January 6th, in a conference room at Trump Tower in New York. I was there with other intelligence community," and he writes, "IC leaders, to brief him and his new national security team on the finding of an IC assessment concerning Russian efforts to interfere in the election. At the conclusion of that briefing, I remained alone with the president-elect to brief him on some personally sensitive aspects of the information assembled during the assessment. The IC leadership thought it important for a variety of reasons to alert the incoming president to the existence of this material, even though it was salacious and unverified. Among those reasons were, number one, we knew the media was about to publicly report the material, and we believe the IC should not keep knowledge of the material and its imminent release from the president-elect. And two, to the extent there was some effort to compromise an incoming president, we could blunt any such effort with a defensive briefing. The Director of National Intelligence asked that I personally do this portion of the briefing because I was staying in my position and because the material implicated the FBI's counterintelligence responsibilities." Comey goes on writing, "Prior to the January 6th meeting, I discussed with the FBI's leadership team whether I should be prepared to assure President-elect Trump that we were not investigating him personally. That was true. We did not have an open counterintelligence case on him. We agreed I should do so if circumstances warranted. During our one-on-one meeting at Trump Tower, based on President-elect Trump's reaction to the briefing and without him directly asking the question, I offered that assurance. I felt compelled to document my first conversation with the President-elect in a memo. To ensure accuracy, I began to type it on a laptop in an FBI vehicle outside Trump Tower the moment I walked out of the meeting. Creating written records immediately after one-on-one conversations with Mr. Trump was my practice from that point forward. I can recall 9 one-on-one conversations with President Trump in 4 months, 3 in person and 6 on the phone." Then Comey goes on to write about the January 27th dinner he had with Donald Trump. "The president and I," he writes, "had dinner on Friday, January 27th at 6:30 p.m. in the green room at the White House. He had called me at lunchtime that day and invited me to dinner that night, saying he was going to invite my whole family, but decided to have just me that time, with the whole family coming the next time. It was unclear from the conversation who else would be at the dinner, although I assumed there would be others. It turned out to be just the two of us seated at a small oval table in the center of the green room. 2 Navy stewards waited on us, only entering the room to serve food and drinks. The president began by asking me whether I wanted to stay on as FBI director, which I found strange because he'd already told me twice in earlier conversations that he hoped I would stay, and I had assured him that I intended to. He said that lots of people wanted my job, and given the abuse I had taken during the previous year, he would understand if I wanted to walk away. My instincts told me that the one-on-one setting and the pretense that this was our first discussion about my position meant the dinner was, at least in part, an effort to have me ask for my job and create some sort of patronage relationship. That concerned me greatly, given the FBI's traditionally independent status in the executive branch. Later, the president said, 'I need loyalty. I expect loyalty.' I didn't move, speak, or change my facial expression in any way during the awkward silence that followed. We simply looked at each other in silence. The conversation then moved on. Near the end of our dinner, writes Comey, the president returned to the subject of my job, saying he was very glad I wanted to stay, adding that he had heard great things about me from Jim Mattis, Jeff Sessions, and many others. He then said, "I need loyalty." I replied, "You will always get honesty from me." He paused and then said, "That's what I want, honest loyalty." I paused and then said, "You will get that from me." As I wrote in the memo I created immediately after the dinner, it is possible we understood the phrase honest loyalty differently, but I decided it wouldn't be productive to push it further. The term honest loyalty had helped end a very awkward conversation, and my explanations had made clear what he should expect. During the dinner, the president returned to the salacious material I had briefed him about on January 6th, and as he had done previously, expressed his disgust for the allegations and strongly denied them. He said he was considering ordering me to investigate the alleged incident to prove it didn't happen. I replied he should give that careful thought because it might create a narrative that we were investigating him personally, which we weren't, and because it was very difficult to prove a negative. He said he would think about it and asked me to think about it. As was my practice for conversations with President Trump, I wrote a detailed memo about the dinner immediately afterwards and shared it with other senior leadership team of the FBI. You're listening to James Comey's written testimony, which was submitted to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, released on Wednesday. February 14th, Oval Office meeting is the next meeting detailed by Comey, where Trump asked the advisors around him to leave Comey and him alone in the Oval Office. Here goes. On February 14th, I went to the Oval Office for a scheduled counterterrorism briefing of the president. He sat behind the desk, and a group of us sat in a semicircle of about six chairs facing him on the other side of the desk. The vice president, deputy director of the FBI, director of the National Counterterrorism Center, secretary of Homeland Security, the attorney general, and I were in a semicircle of chairs. I was directly facing the president, sitting between the deputy CIA director and the director of NCTC. There were quite a few others in the room sitting behind us on couches and chairs. The president signaled the end of the briefing by thanking the group and telling them all that he wanted to speak to me alone. I stayed in my chair. As the participants started to leave the Oval Office, the attorney general lingered by my chair, but the president thanked him and said he wanted to speak only with me. The last person to leave was Jared Kushner, who also stood by my chair and exchanged pleasantries with me. The president then excused him, saying he wanted to speak with me. When the door by the grandfather clock closed and we were alone, the president began by saying, "I want to talk about Mike Flynn." Flynn had resigned the previous day. The president began by saying Flynn hadn't done anything wrong in speaking with the Russians, but he had to let him go because he had misled the vice president. He added that he had other concerns about Flynn, which he did not then specify. The president then made a long series of comments about the problems with leaks of classified information, a concern I shared and still share. After he had spoken for a few minutes about leaks, Reince Priebus leaned in through the door by the grandfather clock, and I could see a group of people waiting behind him. The president waved at him to close the door, saying he would be done shortly. The door closed. The president then returned to the topic of Mike Flynn, saying he is a good guy and has been through a lot. He repeated that Flynn hadn't done anything wrong on his calls with the Russians, but had misled the vice president. He then said, "I hope you can see your way clear to letting this go, to letting Flynn go. He is a good guy. I hope you can let this go." I replied only that he is a good guy. In fact, I had a positive experience dealing with Mike Flynn when he was a colleague as director of Defense Intelligence Agency at the beginning of my term at FBI. I did not say I would let this go. The president returned briefly to the problem of leaks. I then got up and left out the door by the grandfather clock, making my way through the large group of people waiting there, including Mr. Priebus and the vice president. I immediately prepared an unclassified memo of the conversation about Flynn and discussed the matter with FBI senior leadership. I had understood the president to be requesting that we drop any investigation of Flynn in connection with false statements about his conversations with the Russian ambassador in December. I did not understand the president to be talking about the broader investigation into Russia or possible links to his campaign. I could be wrong, but I took him to be focusing on what had just happened with Flynn's departure and the controversy around his account of his phone calls. Regardless, it was very concerning given the FBI's role as an independent investigative agency. The FBI leadership team agreed with me that it was important not to infect the investigative team with the president's request, which we did not intend to abide. We also concluded that given that it was a one-on-one conversation, there was nothing available to corroborate my account. We concluded it made little sense to report it to Attorney General Sessions, who we expected would likely recuse himself from involvement in Russia-related investigations. He did so 2 weeks later. The Deputy Attorney General's role was then filled in an acting capacity by a United States attorney, who would also not be long in the role. After discussing the matter, we decided to keep it very closely held, resolving to figure out what to do with it down the road as our investigation progressed. The investigation moved ahead at full speed with none of the investigative team members or the Department of Justice lawyers supporting them aware of the president's request. Shortly afterwards, I spoke with Attorney General Sessions in person to pass along the president's concerns about leaks. I took the opportunity to implore the Attorney General to prevent any further direct communication between the president and me. I told the AG what had just happened, him being asked to leave while the FBI director who reports to the AG remained behind, was inappropriate and should never happen. He did not reply for the reasons discussed above. I did not mention that the president broached the FBI's potential investigation of General Flynn. And I'm reading from James Comey's prepared statement to the Senate Intelligence Committee, which was released on Wednesday and which was used as a basis for questioning at the Senate Intelligence Committee hearing today. And the question did come up about why Comey, who wanted to distance himself from Donald Trump, continued to take phone calls from Trump. Continuing on, here is what Comey says about a March 30th phone call. On the morning of March 30th, the president called me at the FBI. He described the Russia investigation as a cloud that was impairing his ability to act on behalf of the country. He said he had nothing to do with Russia, had not been involved with hookers in Russia, and had always assumed he was being recorded when in Russia. He asked what we could do to lift the cloud. I responded that we were investigating the matter as quickly as we could and that there would be great benefit if we didn't find anything to our having done the work well. He agreed, but then reemphasized the problem this was causing him. Then the president asked why there had been a congressional hearing about Russia the previous week, at which I had, as the Department of Justice directed, confirmed the investigation into possible coordination between Russia and the Trump campaign. I explained the demands from the leadership of both parties in Congress for more information, and that Senator Grassley had even held up the confirmation of the Deputy Attorney General until we briefed him in detail on the investigation. I explained that we had briefed the leadership of Congress on exactly which individuals we were investigating and that we had told congressional leaders that we were not personally investigating President Trump. I reminded him I had previously told him that. He repeatedly told me, "We need to get that fact out." I did not tell the president that the FBI and the Department of Justice had been reluctant to make public statements that we did not have an open case on President Trump for a number of reasons, most importantly because it would create a duty to correct should that change. And that duty to correct came up again and again at the hearing, continuing with Comey. The president went on to say that if there were some satellite associates of his who did something wrong, it would be good to find that out, but that he hadn't done anything wrong and hoped I would find a way to get it out that we weren't investigating him. In an abrupt shift, he turned the conversation to FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, saying he hadn't brought up the McCabe thing because I had said McCabe was honorable, although McAuliffe was close to the Clintons and had given him, I think he meant Deputy Director McCabe's wife, campaign money. Although I didn't understand why the president was bringing this up, I repeated that Mr. McCabe was an honorable person. He finished by stressing the cloud that was interfering with his ability to make deals for the country and said he hoped I could find a way to get out that he wasn't being investigated. I told him I would see what we could do and that we would do our investigative work well and as quickly as we could. Immediately after that conversation, I called Acting Deputy Attorney General Dana Bonte. A.G. Sessions had by then recused himself on all Russia-related matters, to report the substance of the call from the president and said I would await his guidance. I did not hear back from him before the president called me again 2 weeks later. And this is the written statement that James Comey sent to the Senate Intelligence Committee hearing. Next and finally is a phone call between Comey and Trump on April 11th. Comey writes, "On the morning of April 11th, the president called me and asked what I had done about his request that I get out, that he is not personally under investigation. I replied that I had passed his request to the acting deputy attorney general, but I had not heard back. He replied that the quote-unquote cloud was getting in the way of his ability to do his job. He said that perhaps he would have his people reach out to the acting deputy attorney general. I said that was the way his request should be handled. I said the White House counsel should contact the leadership of DOJ to make the request, which was the traditional channel. He said he would do that and added, because I have been very loyal to you, very loyal. We had that thing, you know. I did not reply or ask him what he meant by that thing. I said only that the way to handle it was to have the White House counsel call the acting deputy attorney general. He said that was what he would do, and the call ended. That was the last time I spoke with President Trump." Here's James Comey's opening statement at the Senate intelligence hearing today.
Director Comey, you are recognized. You have the floor for as long as you might need.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ranking Member Warner, members of the committee, thank you for inviting me here to testify today. I've submitted my statement for the record, and I'm not going to repeat it here this morning. I thought I would just offer some very brief introductory remarks, and then I would welcome your questions. When I was appointed FBI director in 2013, I understood that I served at the pleasure of the president. Even though I was appointed to a 10-year term, which Congress created in order to underscore the importance of the FBI being outside of politics and independent, I understood that I could be fired by a president for any reason or for no reason at all. And on May the 9th, when I learned that I had been fired, for that reason, I immediately came home as a private citizen. But then the explanations, the shifting explanations, confused me and increasingly concerned me. They confused me because the president and I had had multiple conversations about my job, both before and after he took office. And he had repeatedly told me I was doing a great job and he hoped I would stay. And I had repeatedly assured him that I did intend to stay and serve out the remaining 6 years of my term. He told me repeatedly that he had talked to lots of people about me, including our current attorney general, and had learned that I was doing a great job and that I was extremely well-liked by the FBI workforce. So it confused me when I saw on television the president saying that he actually fired me because of the Russia investigation, and learned again from the media that he was telling privately other parties that my firing had relieved great pressure on the Russia investigation. I was also confused by the initial explanation that was offered publicly, that I was fired because of the decisions I had made during the election year. That didn't make sense to me for a whole bunch of reasons, including the time and all the water that had gone under the bridge since those hard decisions that had to be made. That didn't make any sense to me. And although the law required no reason at all to fire an FBI director, the administration then chose to defame me and, more importantly, the FBI by saying that the organization was in disarray, that it was poorly led, that the workforce had lost confidence in its leader. Those were lies, plain and simple. And I am so sorry that the FBI workforce had to hear them, and I'm so sorry that the American people were told them. I worked every day at the FBI to help make that great organization better. And I say help because I did nothing alone at the FBI. There are no indispensable people at the FBI. The organization's great strength is that its values and abilities run deep and wide. The FBI will be fine without me. The FBI's mission will be relentlessly pursued by its people, and that mission is to protect the American people and uphold the Constitution of the United States. I will deeply miss being part of that mission, but this organization and its mission will go on long beyond me and long beyond any particular administration.
Then Vice Chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Senator Mark Warner, Democrat, Virginia. He wants to know why Comey felt it necessary to keep a written, unclassified record of his interactions with Trump.
And let's start with the January 6th meeting in Trump Tower, where you went up with a series of officials to brief the president-elect on the Russia investigation. My understanding is you remained afterwards to brief him on, again, quote, some personally sensitive aspects of the information you relayed. Now, you said after that briefing, you felt compelled to document that conversation, that you actually started documenting it as soon as you got into the car. Now, you've had extensive experience at the Department of Justice and at the FBI. You've worked under presidents of both parties. What was it about that meeting that led you to determine that you needed to start putting down a written record?
A combination of things. I think the circumstances, the subject matter, and the person I was interacting with. Circumstances first, I was alone with the President of the United States, or the President-elect, soon to be President. The subject matter, I was talking about matters that touch on the FBI's core responsibility and that relate to the President, President-elect personally. And then the nature of the person. I was honestly concerned that he might lie about the nature of our meeting, and so I thought it really important to document. That combination of things I'd never experienced before, but it led me to believe I got to write it down, and I got to write it down in a very detailed way.
Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine turns to the investigation of Mike Flynn in her questioning of James Comey.
And first, let me make very clear that the president never should have cleared the room. And he never should have asked you, as you reported, to let it go, to let the investigation go. But I remain puzzled by your response. Your response was, I agree that Michael Flynn is a good guy. You could have said, Mr. President, this meeting is inappropriate. This response could compromise the investigation. You should not be making such a request. It's fundamental to the operation of our government that the FBI be insulated from this kind of political pressure. And you've talked a bit today about that you were stunned by the president making the request. But my question to you is, later on, upon reflection, did you go to anyone at the Department of Justice and ask them to call the White House counsel's office and explain that the president had to have a far better understanding and appreciation of his role vis-a-vis the FBI?
In general, I did. I spoke to the Attorney General and I spoke to the new Deputy Attorney General, Mr. Rosenstein, when he took office, and explain my serious concern about the way in which the president is interacting, especially with the FBI. And I specifically, as I said in my testimony, told the Attorney General, it can't happen that you get kicked out of the room and the president talks to me. But look, in the room, but why didn't we raise the specific? It was of investigative interest to us to try and figure out, so what just happened with the president's request? So I would not have wanted to alert the White House that it had happened until we figured out, what are we going to do with this investigatively?
Your testimony was that you went to Attorney General Sessions and said, don't ever leave me alone with him again. Are you saying that you also told him that he had made a request that you let it go with regard to part of the investigation of Michael Flynn?
No, I specifically did not. I did not.
You mentioned that from your very first meeting with the president, you decided to write a memo memorializing the conversation. What was it about that very first meeting that made you write a memo when you had not done that with two previous presidents?
As I said, a combination of things. A gut feeling is an important overlay on but the circumstances that I was alone, the subject matter, and the nature of the person that I was interacting with, and my read of that person. And really just a gut feel laying on top of all of that, that this, it's going to be important to protect this organization, that I make records of this.
And finally, did you show copies of your memos to anyone outside of the Department of Justice?
Yes.
And to whom did you show copies?
I asked, President tweeted on Friday after I got fired that I better hope there's not tapes. I woke up in the middle of the night on Monday night, because it didn't dawn on me originally, that there might be corroboration for our conversation. There might be a tape. And my judgment was I needed to get that out into the public square. And so I asked a friend of mine to share the content of the memo with a reporter. Didn't do it myself for a variety of reasons, but I asked him to because I thought that might prompt the appointment of a special counsel. And so I asked a close friend of mine to do it.
And was that Mr. Wittes?
No.
Who was that?
A good friend of mine who's a professor at Columbia Law School.
Thank you.
And the hearing ended this afternoon with Senator John McCain, who wasn't buying some of Comey's explanations.
We have not announced, and there was no predication to announce, an investigation of whether the Russians may have coordinated with Secretary Clinton's campaign.
No, but they may not have been involved with their campaign. They were involved with the entire presidential campaign, obviously.
Of course. Yes, sir. And that is an investigation that began last summer, and so far as I'm aware, continues.
So both President Trump and former candidate Clinton are both involved in the investigation, yet one of them, you said, there's going to be no charges, and the other one, the investigation continues. Well, I think there's a double standard there, to tell you the truth. Then when the president said to you, you talked about the April 11th phone call, and he said, quote, because I've been very loyal to you, very loyal. We had that thing, you know. Did that arouse your curiosity as what, quote, that thing was?
Yes.
Why didn't you ask him?
It didn't seem to me to be important for the conversation we were having to understand it. I took it to be an effort to communicate to me this, that there is a relationship between us where I've been good to you, you should be good to me.
Yeah, but I think it would intensely arouse my curiosity if the President of the United States said, we had that thing, you know. I'd like to know what the hell that thing is, particularly if I'm the director of the FBI.
Yeah, I get that, Senator. Honestly, I'll tell you what, this is speculation, but what I concluded at the time is in his memory he was searching back to our encounter at the dinner and was preparing himself to say, I offered loyalty to you, you promised loyalty to me, and all of a sudden his memory showed him that did not happen, and I think he pulled up short. That's just a guess, but I have a lot of conversations with humans over the years.
I think I would have had some curiosity if it had been about me, to be honest with you. So are you aware anything that would believe you to believe that the president or the members of the administration or members of the campaign could potentially be used to coerce or blackmail the administration?
That's a subject for investigation. It's not something I can comment on sitting here.
But you reached that conclusion as far as Secretary Clinton was concerned. But you're not reaching a conclusion as far as this administration is concerned. Are you aware of anything that would lead you to believe that information exists that could coerce members of the administration or blackmail the administration?
That's not a question I can answer, Senator.
Senator's time's expired.
Senator John McCain, Republican from Arizona, questioning former FBI Director James Comey today at the Senate Intelligence Committee hearing. After the public hearing, the committee went into closed session to hear more from James Comey. And that's all we have time for today. You can go to pacifica.org for analysis of today's hearing. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.